Welcome to Trade Finance Talks, a podcast from Trade Finance Global. During this series, we'll be hearing from global experts, as well as learning about the latest trends, technology, and insights in the world of international trade and receivables finance. Episode 9.
Africa is watching the US-China trade war and other geopolitical events like Brexit with great interest. It is the course towards free trade and fast-paced economic recovery. Those are the reasons what makes Africa exciting at the moment. Debt is the buzzword at the moment when we're talking about Africa.
I'm Dipesh Patel, editor at Trade Finance Global. To date, Africa has seen pockets of regional growth this year, and we're speaking to ex-Africa's Robert Besseling to find out more. With so much hearsay and risk coming out of Africa, constantly making international news in the headlines, we often don't hear much about what's actually happening on the ground. There are so many macroeconomic factors at a regional level that could help catalyze some of the small to mid-sized economies, providing pockets of opportunity and growth in Africa. But there is often a lack of quality data, intelligence, and reporting. So we're joined today by Robert Besseling, Executive Director of ex-Africa, to find out more about what's been happening so far this year and what business leaders, financiers, and policymakers should be talking about when it comes to regions and countries within Africa, home to 1.2 billion of the world's population. So without further ado, here is Robert joining us from Johannesburg, South Africa. Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast.
Hi, Dipesh. Good to talk to you today.
So, elevator pitch. In no more than 30 seconds, tell us a bit about yourself and ex-Africa.
Right. ex-Africa is a company that I founded in 2015. The company provides analysis and forecasts on political risk, security risk, and economic risk across all 54 African countries. We work mostly with some of the major DFIs, commercial banks and insurance companies, as well as some corporates, governments, and commodities traders. So quite a broad spectrum of clients who tap into our subscription platform on African risk.
Robert, why Africa?
It's a key question, Dipesh. I mean, there's a lot of African news at the moment, cyclones in Mozambique, bomb attacks in the east, war and coups in various parts of the continent. So, yeah, why Africa is very pertinent. But then again, as you mentioned in your introduction earlier, there are pockets of economic excitement. If you look just at the fastest growing economies in Africa, they also fall into the category of the fastest growing economies in the world. Economy like Ethiopia, for example, growing yet again in the record over 8% growth real GDP this year. Various other African countries in the east and the west, like Ghana, Ivory Coast, and Senegal, or Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda, growing at record rates, often over 6% of real GDP growth. So that's what makes Africa exciting. And similarly, there are some key developments across the African continent, including, for example, the formulation of what could become the world's largest free trade union. Now, again, this is a process which is in progress, under construction. A number of countries have signed up to it, are ratifying the deal, and it still needs to be implemented. And that might be thwarted to some extent, or in some parts of the African continent, by a sense of nationalism and populism and economic protectionism. But generally speaking, it is the course towards free trade and fast-paced economic recovery. Those are the reasons what makes Africa exciting at the moment.
Thanks, Robert. So taking a high-level overview on Africa as a nation, what are the current key macroeconomic and geopolitical themes around trade, oil price, inflation, and interest rates? And what is the impact of these on financial markets?
Well, you can probably anticipate my answer to your question in terms of the oft-repeated statement that Africa is not just one nation. Africa is a continent consisting of 54 countries, all with very different exposures to the international financial system, etc. In fact, most of Africa remains very shielded from the international financial system. And therefore, global trends like inflation or interest rates and global trade wars very often do not impact a number of African countries. That's what we saw during the global financial crisis and various other global trends. That is starting to change, though. And we are seeing more and more countries being exposed to global trends like rising US interest rates or the volatility in the oil price, etc. But generally speaking, we have to look at Africa, if not as a collection of countries, at least as a collection of regions. And then we can see, for example, the East African region, we can start to see trends in trade volumes and intra-regional trade. We can see the volatility in the oil price climate having an impact on regions rather than on Africa as a continent as a whole. So Africa is starting to change and is becoming more exposed to international trends, but it is still very much a progress.
Thank you. Very, very interesting. So which regions are most exposed to the international ecosystem in terms of the US-China trade war, for example, and Brexit, and what impact is this having on the need for funding and investor sentiment in those regions?
Africa is watching the US-China trade war and other geopolitical events like Brexit with great interest, because on the one hand, it is a threat like it is to other parts of the world, where it could diminish trade and it could uproot existing investment and trade agreements. On the other hand, because Africa has been left out of many of these agreements in the first place, some African countries, some African regions, could in fact see a real advantage here. You ask me which regions, and East Africa, for example, where most of that growth at the moment is coming from, because of Ethiopia and Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Uganda being at the forefront of East Africa's economic growth story, that region in particular is hoping to benefit on the back of an eventual Brexit process by signing deals with key investors from the UK or with the British government after the UK has left the European Union on a potentially more favorable basis. After all, a country like Kenya or Tanzania would find it easier to deal with the UK alone rather than dealing with the entire block of European Union countries. So that's already one aspect that we are seeing. In terms of the US-China trade war, on the one hand, yes, the impact the trade war is having on the Chinese economy is already seeing a diminished appetite for commodities from Africa. And that is indeed starting to taper off some of the excitement, particularly around metals and other commodities coming from Africa. On the other hand, the Chinese are already anticipating that the relationship with the US will have to diminish in the future in any case. And therefore, they're looking for new opportunities interconnected potentially through BRI initiative. And most of Africa's governments have now signed up to this initiative, the Belt and Road Initiative. And China is really pushing greater interaction with African countries, not just outwards exports from Africa into China of raw materials, but also of manufactured goods from China into Africa, and even Chinese trade starting to affect the manufactured goods in Africa going to China and other places. So you can see that the US-China trade war and Brexit, these are global patterns which are starting to change how trade and investment works in Africa. This again, as I started out answering your question, this could pose a threat, but there are a number of flip side opportunities here as well. So definitely we'll have to keep on watching, particularly for those fast growing regions like East and West Africa.
Interesting. And we look forward to hearing those continued updates in terms of how certain regions in Africa are really jumping on some of the opportunities stemming out of potential uncertainty, volatility, trade wars, etc. Now let's look at the investor sentiment in a little more detail. Financial inclusion is obviously at the top of the agenda for banks and policymakers across the region, with a significant proportion of the, you know, the reported $1.5 trillion trade finance gap stemming out of Africa, African countries, and also out of SMEs. How can investors, so perhaps country investors, find value in Africa's credit markets to meet some of this unmet financing demand for small businesses? And what are the biggest barriers to entry? So what needs to be done in order to open up this asset class for financing African trade?
You're absolutely right, Dipesh. Financial inclusion is crucial for African countries and African companies, and particularly SMEs, to start tapping into or starting to benefit from this economic growth that we were talking about earlier, particularly in the east and west of the country, where we're seeing most of the economic success. The problem is that Africa's credit markets are still very much restrained by typical barriers to entry, like regulations, restrictive legislation, etc. I'll give you a few examples. Look at Kenya, for example, mentioned earlier, the largest economy in the east of the continent, and really driving growth and trade and investment in East Africa. However, about 2 years ago, the Kenyan government imposed a cap on interest rates. That has very much stymied the local banking sector and made banking far less profitable than it was before. And certainly, the local Kenyan banking sector is now being starved of liquidity. And again, SMEs in East Africa and Kenya are failing to tap in to the banking sector locally. So this is one particular example, but there is a number of other trends in East Africa and across the continent that we can mention here in terms of what needs to be done to open up credit markets. And another key encouragement from the IMF, from international investors, etc., is to consolidate Africa's banking sector. This has happened in places like Nigeria, for example, very successfully in 2009 after a banking crisis. The various small and medium-sized Nigerian banks were consolidated into national and even regional champions. That needs to happen in more places in Africa. For example, in Ghana, this is critical for the success of Ghana's banking sector, particularly as the economy grows on the back of higher oil exports and then values in oil exports. And similarly, this is also something that needs to happen in East Africa, in places like Kenya or Tanzania, where banking sectors need to be consolidated. And in other places, they need to be liberalized completely. Places like Angola or Ethiopia in particular, where the banking sector remains very much state-dominated and where credit markets are almost closed off to local SMEs as well as to foreign investors. So a lot needs to be done, particularly liberalization in consolidation, as well as in breaking down the red tape barriers to entry. And obviously, the removal of interest rate caps in places like Kenya would certainly be a real benefit to the development of credit markets in Africa.
Great. And I guess the consolidation of countries within particular regions to access better infrastructure, have economies of scale, is always going to be good for the country, but also those regions. Let's go into a little bit more detail on North Africa now, in particularly with regards to oil price. You recently published a report looking at the impact of oil price volatility to African fuel importers of 2019. We know the oil price seems to have strengthened and stabilized somewhat more recently. How closely linked is oil price to the short, medium, and longer term prospects of the larger oil exporters such as Nigeria, Angola, Algeria, and also Egypt?
Yep, you're right. Ex-Africa did publish a special report in the beginning of January this year about oil price volatility and the impact this has on Africa. The report very much focused on the volatility being the main risk, and that is what we've seen previously as well. Many African oil exporters and oil importers are now able to deal with either very high or very low oil prices by building it into their budgets and provisioning oil imports, etc. The real risk is oil price volatility. And certainly so far in 2019, we have seen a bit of a stabilization potentially since the way oil trends at the beginning of the year. However, the oil price still remains very prone to external factors and increased volatility, and that remains a risk across the African continent. In terms of Africa's largest oil producers, however, many of these countries have seemed to have learned a lesson from previous drops in oil prices, as in 2015-16 or in 2007-8, when their budgets were based on very ambitious oil price calculations. Nigeria, for example, now is basing its budget on about a $60 per barrel as a benchmark. Now, this has been criticized as potentially too ambitious by some local economists, but certainly it's far more realistic than Nigeria's budget calculations in previous generations. Similarly for Angola, the budget there, particularly with the support of the International Monetary Fund, as it is in Egypt, again with support of the International Monetary Fund, these economies are starting to reform themselves, are starting to, as I said earlier, that they've learned lessons in terms of previous oil price shocks and are able to move on more quickly, prepare themselves in case of any sudden volatility in the oil price. Countries like Algeria and Sudan, or South Sudan in particular, it's quite different on that level. First of all, these are countries where we've seen huge political change over the past few weeks and months, and again, where not much is being reformed in terms of economic and financial policy, in particular also in expenditure, spending oil revenues. Essentially a different topic. But a quick note potentially on the flip side, is that there are a number of African economies which still have very heavy import bills of petroleum products. And there, we're seeing African fuel importers being less likely to reap economic benefits from potentially lower oil prices in 2019. And that's because many of these economies still remain unreformed, unlike some of the largest oil producers on the African continent. So potentially, Africa could do better off with a lower oil price in general than with a higher oil price this year, just in the way that some economies have managed to reform themselves and prepare themselves for any further oil price volatility.
That's a very interesting way of looking at it from the other side too. Now, closely linked with that are interest rates. Will interest rates continue to rise, and should we be concerned about countries with high US dollar debt?
Debt is the buzzword at the moment when we're talking about Africa. And you're right, this has everything to do with what's happening in the US globally, what's happening with the oil price, etc. Much, or almost all of Africa's debt remains US dollar denominated. Even China's debt to Africa is mostly US dollar denominated. So what's happening in terms of the devaluation of African local currencies and continued strength of the US dollar remains a real concern in terms of the servicing of Africa's debt in US dollars, particularly as a number of countries are running out of US dollars. Even the countries that are doing particularly well, like Ethiopia, they have tended to import more over the past few years than they have managed to export. So they've run out of foreign exchange. So it is these countries which have been saddled with high debt, whether from the Paris Club or from the IMF or from China, it's almost irrelevant that these high debt servicing costs are becoming a real problem. And over the past few years, we've gone through a number of scandals in the Republic of Congo, in Mozambique, most notably, in Zambia to a certain extent, where amounts of debt have been discovered which weren't properly calculated or disclosed previously. So that also brings us to another argument in terms of whether more debt in Africa should be based or denominated in local currency. But then again, most of Africa's revenues are derived from commodities, particularly foreign exchange revenues are derived from commodity exports. So it almost makes no sense then for many African economies to denominate its debt in local currency. It's only countries that have a dovish monetary policy and stable central banks that, like Ghana, Nigeria potentially, South Africa, that can issue local currency debt and do issue local currency debt on a regular basis. But many others, like Kenya with an interest rate cap or Zambia with potential miscalculations on debt, for them, there's a completely different scenario. So debt will remain a key topic in terms of risk and concern throughout 2019, and particularly for those countries which remain very much exposed to high debt servicing costs.
Thanks, Robert. So let's now move on and look at the recent disruption in Sudan and Algeria. What has happened in 2019 and what are the impacts this has on trade?
What has happened in 2019 has been quite spectacular in terms of an Africa-focused political risk analyst like myself. We've seen a very busy first 4 months of the year with crises in Zimbabwe and Gabon across the sub-Saharan part of the continent. But as you mentioned, what we've seen in North Africa, particularly in places like Sudan and Algeria or Libya, you know, has been a roller coaster in terms of the sudden political change, the unrest, the corruption investigations that we're now seeing, the succession of military interventions. However, if we look at actual disruption to trade, it has been relatively mitigated. In a place like Libya, for example, the outflows of the oil sector have not been that affected. Similarly, the flows of trade from South Sudan, particularly the oil that is piped through Sudan in the north, has barely been affected. And similarly in Algeria, where the protests do seem to be slowing at the moment, again, there has been some disruption to airports and marine ports, but most of these supply chains have remained intact, and the actual loss to trade values has been, considering the situation, relatively minimal. Now, that can still change. The political change that we're seeing in these countries at the moment is very much reminiscent of the Arab Spring in 2011 and a variety of other political events that we've seen since then, where countries have fallen into major bouts of unrest, civil war, or have become more prone to political instability and terrorism than previously. So certainly we'll have to keep on watching what's happening in places like Sudan and Algeria very closely over the coming weeks, months, years potentially, because this type of instability does open up these countries to other threats, like more coups, like civil war, or particularly for countries like Algeria, the spread of Islamist terrorism.
Thanks, Robert. Very good insight there. So let's now take a forward-looking view and look at the next couple of years. Which economies are, in your opinion, going to be the winners and losers of 2019 and 2020? Which countries will face adverse economic and financial conditions? And what are the opportunities?
It really comes down to which countries are able to reform themselves. Reform is highly complex, particularly from a political perspective. Countries like Ethiopia and Angola, which for years have been very much closed to foreign investment, are now starting to open up, to liberalize and privatize and to reform bloated public sector payrolls, to privatize failing and tarnished state-owned enterprises, and to liberalize key sectors. It's these types of countries that in 2019 and 2020, the reform will stand in their advantage over these coming years. On the flip side, countries that are refusing to reform, particular countries like Tanzania, potentially, which is going back towards the nationalist, state interventionist way of Tanzania in the 60s and 70s, or potentially countries like Algeria, which have failed to reform their oil sectors and their banking sectors over many generations, they could face further economic headwinds over the next 2 years. So my main answer here, and it's a bit of a broad one, but there are a number of countries which do fall on the optimistic side, is reform. Countries that can reform, either internally or with the help of the International Monetary Fund, are more likely to be able to weather the global headwinds over the next few years.
Thanks, Robert. Very, very interesting there. So I guess bringing this podcast to a close and looking at some of the key themes here, I think debt really is US dollar denominated debt. That is, it really is a buzzword and a key theme, particularly for any countries which have not yet been reformed. And I guess moving on from that, the opportunities really lie around reform, opening up, and also working together intra-trade.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Right. So look, really look forward to hearing you speak at TXF Amsterdam in a couple of weeks. And we really appreciate your time joining us here at Trade Finance Talks, Robert. So thank you very much for your time. And thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Dipesh. Thank you for recording this.
Thanks for listening to Trade Finance Talks. Be sure to subscribe to our podcasts at tradefinanceglobal.com.